Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and that horse meat scandal in Europe just won't go away. Developments nearly every day. Roping in Poland most recently, as officials there have admitted that Poland may be the source of the mislabeled meat. But the outrage over horse meat has got us thinking about food taboos around here and what we would or wouldn't eat. Sure, the issue in Europe seems to be mainly about mislabeling, but it's also about relative cultural boundaries. In England, horse meat is shunned. Just across the channel in France, horse meat can be found, correctly labeled, in grocery stores. So what's the difference? So we're opening up the phones now to hear about your food taboos. If you're an adventurous eater, where do you draw the line? There are some adventurous eating clubs around the city. Maybe you belong to one of those. But do you draw the line at insects, jellyfish, cow liver, shark, live octopus? Have you heard about that one? Chicken feet? Are there things you just will never eat? And why? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for the things that you would never eat, even though you know other people do. And while your calls are coming in, joining me now to help take your calls is Rachel Sanders, Associate Editor of Food for BuzzFeed. She's written about the taboo of horse meat for the site. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And before we take these calls, and I see our board is filling up a little slowly, people are thinking about it. Where do I really draw the line? Maybe insects, you know, cover them with a little garlic sauce or something might not be so bad. So people are figuring it out, and they're calling 212-433-WNYC. But we want to bring us up to speed on the horse meat scandal in Europe. There may be a few people listening who haven't been following this story.
Right, maybe one or two at this point.
That's right.
Sure, yeah, I mean, I think you sort of covered the very basics, but basically in January, I think, was the first time the news broke that they were finding products in the UK, like the UK Burger King. They found burgers that were supposedly beef that actually maybe contained a little bit of horse meat. And since then, it's really snowballed. They're finding all kinds of frozen pasta stuff in supermarkets, lasagna. This is in Ireland and England and France. And the latest one that I think really hit home for people was the IKEA Swedish meatballs, apparently. Also contain some horse. Yeah, not in the U.S. because we don't, we're not importing the same ones here.
But you don't have to put it together yourself, do you?
No.
There are questions.
I don't think so. They come frozen.
And there are questions about government oversight, as we mentioned, and about mislabeling. But you also wrote in your piece that there's a cultural squeamishness in Britain, as in this country, about horse meat. Why is it so taboo?
That's the question. There is this historical thing that is very British. It's sort of like throughout what used to be the British Empire, which I think is why Americans have it too, about horses aren't, you know, farm animals. Horses are pets, are companions. You love them. It's Black Beauty. It's Mr. Ed. And how could you possibly eat this animal that's so noble and wonderful? But I think it's really, you know, that's why this reaction has been so huge. It's not a logical problem. It's emotional baggage, basically. So this thing about mislabeling, which is a totally valid concern, like you don't want to eat something that is saying it's beef when it's not, that is really amplified by people's emotional reaction to it.
Let's take a call. Inga in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Inga.
And hi, Bon. How are you? Yes, I told the checker that I grew up during the war and later in East Germany. And sometimes horse meat was the only meat that was available. And as a matter of fact, there was rarely anything else. Depending on how it's prepared, you couldn't differentiate the taste very much. And I think it's the labeling that is the outcry, not the fact that it's horse meat. I was in Vietnam and we ate dog meat. It depends on the culture. It depends on, and I think that is the interest of the global traveling. I would eat insects if somebody in a foreign country serves it to me.
I think there's a word for you, and it's omnivore.
Probably, yes. That's right. But I learned from childhood, we were happy when we got horse meat.
Was horse meat, in your experience, tasty? Did it have a different taste from beef?
It has a slightly different taste. It smells stronger when you prepare it. But otherwise, to me as a child, no, it didn't taste any different.
Thank you for your call, Inga. I really appreciate you starting us off. So, Rachel, you spoke to a few chefs and butchers for your piece. Some of them told you that they wish they could get some horse meat on their menus around here. So I guess that is the taboo question. Do they think it's tasty and that's why they want it?
I think so. I've certainly all the feedback I got, and I talked a lot with David McMillan at Joe Beef, which is a restaurant in Montreal that sort of Americans now love to go to, and so they can say, oh, I ate horse, and it wasn't that crazy. But he's saying, you know, it's good. It's not that different from beef, and it's really good as steaks or, you know, as cured meats, and it's actually healthier. You know, it has less fat. It's good lean protein, and bodybuilders love it, he was saying. So, you know, chefs here in New York, I think, would be so ready to serve it, but there's no infrastructure. There's no supply chain. And in fact, when, you know, M. Wells Dinette, which opened up in Queens, talked about putting horse tartare on their menu, and there was this huge outcry to the point that they just had to roll back the whole thing.
Yesterday on the show, we talked about some of the foods discussed in the American Museum of Natural History's current exhibit on the global kitchen, and some ingredients like insects are ubiquitous in other cultures, but definitely not mainstream in the United States. There are over 2,000 species of insects eaten worldwide, we learned. Listen, for those of you who weren't with us yesterday, insects.
Beetles, butterflies, locusts. For the most part, for the smaller insects, people eat those, you know, when they're in their larval stages or their pupil stages. So a lot of people don't think that sounds appealing, especially here in the United States. But if you think of shrimp... or even lobsters. You know, if you, those are things that we've learned to like.
I love that evil little giggle from Dr. Eleanor Sterling, one of the curators, very distinguished curator at the American Museum of Natural History. But it was like, oh, shrimp and lobster. If we weren't so steeped in them, we would think those were gross.
Exactly. And it's such a funny reaction to not eat something based on how you feel about it in your heart versus how it actually tastes, because horse is so much less weird than half of the stuff that you find at restaurants all over the place.
Yuli in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Yuli.
Hey, I just wanted to say that, well, two things. In Mexico, my mom, when she went to the butcher shop, local butcher shop, she would spot horse meat. It was a leaner and a little more red color than beef, and she would say, "No, I'm not going to get that." But everybody knows that it's in the butcher shops trying to be beef. And the other thing is that she used to make grasshoppers.
How'd she prepare them?
Well, just on a pan, like pan fried with a little lime juice and. Chili pepper and salt.
Is it all like crunchy bones, or does it taste like anything?
It is crunchy, and it's very oily. The taste is oily, and you know, on a tortilla, everything tastes great in a taco. So
you can get away with a lot. Thank you, Yuli. Kristen in Rye, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just calling to say, in the U.S., I used to live in San Francisco. My husband and I lived there for 10 years, and we were at the Chinese New Year celebration, and we were eating, I think it was fried rice, and we were eating away, and then we realized we had been eating grubs that were in the fried rice, and it didn't really bother us until we actually, you know, spotted them and said, are these grubs, to one another, and realized we'd been eating the grubs. But had we not seen them, I don't even know that it would have, you know, made a difference.
Chris, thank you for your call. Now, on Facebook, where we've been asking this question today, a lot of folks posted about organs when they were asked where they would draw the line. Jessica said she liked liver and kidney and chicken hearts. They're fantastic. She likes pig ear. But eyeballs, she draws the line at eyeballs. Does anybody eat eyeballs, Rachel? Do you know?
I have no idea. I know I wouldn't. But there's a restaurant in New York called Takashi where their shtick is sort of serving every single part of a cow you can think of. And I would bet you they've had eyeballs on the menu at some point.
Well, here's Yehuda in Brooklyn who has an unusual part of a cow to bring up. Hi, Yehuda.
Hi. Well, I'm a religious Jew, and a lot of the more interesting things there are out there, but things like liver are just a casual part of everyday thing. We eat them all the time.
Sure. I had liver growing up in a Jewish household as a kid. Cow liver. You wouldn't have pig
Pretty
liver.
Pretty awesome stuff. But there is an interesting long...
Chopped liver? Chopped liver is a delicacy. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, there's an interesting law that allows you to eat a... Normally, an animal's got to be slaughtered. It allows you to eat a fetus, though, that's found in a slaughtered cow.
Your line is breaking up, but I think you said in Jewish law you could eat a cow fetus that was found in a slaughtered cow. Have you ever been offered this or had it?
Well, I was at a friend's house, and they pulled out just all these crazy manner of offal. We had heart, which tastes fantastic. Lungs, really good. That's where we drew the line, though. We pulled it out, looked at it, looked like a scary alien, and I said, I'm not that adventurous.
Well, that's a story, Yehuda. Thank you very much. You know, we eat chicken fetus all the time, don't we, Rachel? We call it eggs.
We call it eggs, and no one seems bothered by it.
John in Paramus, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I've eaten calves' brains, and thanks to Lenny, I've eaten sea urchins and tripe, which is the cow's stomach, and I've eaten octopus and snails, you know, escargot. But I would draw the line at eating anything with a personality, like a horse or a dog or anything like that.
Personality. And maybe, he really may have keyed in on something for human sensibilities, because an animal that we consider as having a personality is something that makes an emotional connection with us, and then it becomes harder, you think?
I mean, I think it's a funny line to draw, because you think, I mean, I don't know, obviously horses have great personalities. I've known many nice horses, but so do
some of your
cows.
Best friends are horses.
Yeah, some of my best friends, right. And pigs certainly have personalities. Like, for anyone who's ever seen the movie Babe, that's what it's about. This is a pig with a huge personality. And obviously we're not going to eat Babe, but it doesn't mean we don't eat pork all the time.
In fact, I have a friend who is not a vegetarian, does eat meat, but says they won't eat pork because pigs are smart.
Yeah, right.
Jason posted on Facebook that his uncle put a plate of dog meat in front of him during a visit to Korea. He writes, I couldn't partake simply because I felt like I was betraying my dog and he would somehow know.
Aww.
I would just die of guilt forever.
Oh, no, he'd smell it on you.
Andrew in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Where do you draw the line?
I kind of draw the line at the upper and lower limits of the size of the creature. I guess where, mammals are concerned. So maybe like on the small side, a squirrel is where I would draw the line. And, on the upper side, a cow or a bison or something, not a, blue whale or something.
So a squirrel would be too small. I'm not sure I get the whole size thing.
I wouldn't really want to eat a sparrow, but a chicken is a big enough bird, where it seems edible.
Well, at a certain point, it just seems like a practical issue. It's harder to make a sparrow worth eating.
And did you say a bison would be too big?
No, I mean, that's about my upper limit. I mean, so, I think there are people, who eat exotic game like bear, for instance. And I don't think I would eat bear.
Right. So bison, yes. Mammoth, no.
Yes.
Andrew,
if you can find one.
Yeah, it's a little tough to find these days. Well, we're almost out of time. Let's see. Vanessa wrote on Facebook that she went to the Wild Food Festival in New Zealand on the west coast of New Zealand. There were hoo-hoo grubs, which she wrote tastes like peanut butter, goat, possum worms, more typical fare like sweetbread, pig's trotters. She wrote that she was lucky enough to try some of the interesting quote, food that she would normally never eat. Where do you draw the line for yourself, Rachel?
I was trying to figure that out. I mean, honestly, I can't even remember exactly what the weirdest thing I've eaten is, but I'm sure I've had, you know, like fried brains at some point. And it's not that I would necessarily go after it and eat it, but it's interesting to try that stuff. I don't know. It took me a while to get used to oysters, and I'm a big fan now.
One last post from Facebook. Lisa wrote, I will eat anything but draw the line at prune juice. I have learned to not ask what something is. Other than that, I will just eat it. Rachel Sanders, Associate Food Editor at BuzzFeed. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.